You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Well, I say 8:50, you're 3 hours, you're in the future, so.
Future's right over here. Every day.
Right now, lately, it'd be good to know what's going to happen 3 hours from where you are.
Yeah, it'll be all good. Gonna have some coffee, maybe.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. Super excited. We got Gina Gleason from Philadelphia. Gina is just a great guitarist. Plays guitar with Baroness. Has played with some really big names in the past, and really quite an incredible creator and musician. Gina Gleason, want to welcome you to the podcast.
Hey, thank you, man. Thank you for all the kind words, man. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. So tell us about when you were young. I mean, were you born with a guitar in your hand? Did you like art? Did you get in trouble? What were you like?
I picked up guitar a little later, I guess when I was like 14 or so. And yeah, I don't know, kind of a similar story to many, many, many people, but parents split up, you know, so sometime at dad's house, sometime at mom's house, that kind of thing. And dad happened to have a guitar laying around the house, and it was like a thing to do, you know. I just wanted to like mess around with it and try to learn. But I don't know. I have one older brother. He and I are like best friends still to this day, and we were always really tight growing up. We didn't have that sibling teasing and arguing kind of thing. We were always like really tight buddies, and I always just wanted to like emulate what he had going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, he and I kind of got into music around the same time. He's 4 years older than me. Yeah, we kind of liked like hip-hop and stuff like that first, like stuff that was on the radio and then a little more accessible. And then I think as he got older and got into his like high school friend group, and I was, you know, like the younger sister, I kind of was trying to find stuff on my own. And I remember buying British Steel, Judas Priest album.
Yeah.
First album I ever bought. I don't know why I bought it. I think I still have the cover. And started, that kind of started the, that whole wormhole of metal and music. And then, yeah, like I said, dad had a guitar laying around the house, and I just kind of would try to pick it up and mess around. And he had this like VHS tape that was like how to play the blues.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you pop it on, it's this dude showing you like 12 bar blues. And I remember being like, oh, I just want to learn that. And then like, I'll be good. Like if I could just get that, I feel like that would be enough to satisfy this thing that I'm feeling inside, this like urge to do this. But yeah, I don't know. As a kid, I was, I don't think I got in trouble too much. I was kind of just like a lame kid. I just, you know, I just kind of kept to myself. I did try to do music, but I tried to like not disappoint my mom. Had a lot of the Italian guilt thing going on. So I tried to like get good grades and like keep to myself and do that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you? You know, we're talking the last name Vellante here, so right.
Yeah.
I definitely picked up on, you know, you're talking about your brother. I have a close relationship with, you know, my siblings and my brother. My sister is 12 years younger than me, so my brother and I are very close in age, and definitely just kind of shared a lot of the same experiences, right? And influences. So you said you start around 14, and you know, it sound to me some metal influence. I want to just kind of jump ahead and just kind of talk, you know, for the listeners, get acquainted with, you know, the work that you do, where, you know, a bit, you know, that it's a bit more public. you had a gig, and I saw a video on it, and it was just really fascinating for Cirque du Soleil, and it was a Michael Jackson tribute album, and you played a character called the Muse. Incredible, obviously incredible, wild outfit, a lot of time, looks like extreme dedication for a long time doing that. First of all, though, is that outfit the most metal or the least metal outfit you could wear? I wasn't sure. I'm like, that's either the least metal or the most metal thing I've ever seen.
That's true. It's definitely the least punk outfit I could wear.
Least punk. tell the listeners about, you know, how you ended up in a kind of world-renowned, you know, playing guitar in a world-renowned, you know, Michael Jackson riffs. How did all that happen?
At the time, I was playing in a couple bands in Philly, and I worked at Guitar Center and was also, like, teaching lessons and stuff. And I was 20. And my friend just sent me a link that she saw this Facebook ad that said, literally just said, like, Cirque du Soleil is looking for, like, a female guitar player for something, a show, or I don't even think it said. It just said, like, female guitar player. And she was like, you should check this out. And, you know, it was almost like, I dare you to do this, you know, like a audition or apply or whatever. And I didn't really know what Cirque du Soleil was. I never heard of it, never seen a Cirque du Soleil show, but I was down to do anything that involved playing guitar, you know?
Right.
And so I applied, and first they kind of had this process of like sending videos of yourself to them. So they were based out of Montreal in Canada. So they would ask for certain videos, like one of just like, can you do some like improv guitar work, just kind of shred, send a little minute, 2 minute long clip. And then from there, they were like, hey, that's cool. Can you send a clip of doing more like clean chicken picking kind of stuff, like more rhythmic stuff? And so I did that. And then they asked if I could send a video of doing like the Beat It solo specifically. And I was like, oh, it's very specific. So did that. And then they called me one day. I was on the way to work and they were like, yeah, we're doing this show. It's like a Michael Jackson themed show. Do you want to play guitar for it? You'd actually have to move to Las Vegas. In hindsight, I don't know. If somebody asked me that now, I think I'd be like, Yeah, at the time I was 20 and I was like, fuck yeah, that sounds awesome. So I did that. I moved to Montreal first and we actually created this like show. It was pretty much just like, there's a director who's like, everything I was involved in is this whole other world. I feel like I was a tourist in this whole other world that exists of the music, like industry or whatever you want to call it, that wasn't anything that I was used to or anything of like what I like do now, you know what I mean? It's like this whole world with like choreographers and, blah, and all this stuff. And, you know, it was neat to kind of be, like I said, it really felt like I was like a tourist in this other side of like music or entertainment or whatever. So in Montreal, Cirque du Soleil has this like headquarters thing set up. It's like Circus NASA, you know, you go in and they have all these crazy apparatuses and people are doing flips and all this crazy shit, you know, like hanging on stuff and all that. And from there, the guy that was like the, you know, director, choreographer had all these ideas for these scenes. And all of us as a cast just kind of put on the table what we had to offer. And we created this crazy show that still runs in Vegas. I mean, not currently, everything's obviously shut down, but, you know, still is going. So yeah, it's really, really crazy experience. As a musician, it's kind of, it was kind of interesting because you do 484 shows a year.
Whoa.
So you're doing two a day and then, you know, periodically it'll be like a week off or 3 days off so they can clean the theater and do just like general maintenance on all of the automated scenery and stuff like that, that runs on lifts and hydraulic lifts and that kind of thing. But yeah, you're doing the same thing and playing the same things, 484 times a year. Doesn't leave you a lot of time to like pursue other things like touring, especially is like definitely off the table. Yeah, while I lived out in Vegas, I moved from Philly first to Montreal and then to Vegas to pursue this. And I tried to take on like band projects and things that I hoped would like tour, or like things that I could, you know, write music with other people and hopefully like do shows and tour and just function as a normal band. But that was kind of off the table with when you're doing that kind of a schedule. So you're stuck with this like weird mental thing where it's like, I am playing guitar for a living, but I'm not stoked. And that, yeah, that becomes like a really crazy thing in your head. You're like, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I not stoked 24/7? I'm literally playing guitar every day for a living. You know what I mean? But it's this strange conundrum, you know?
Yeah, I'd imagine, you know, just from what you're saying, within that, I mean, you're young enough to want to be able to creatively, like, spread your wings and, like, to do, like, what you want to do. And obviously, you're in a situation where you'd be learning tons, right, about the industry and about showmanship and performance and all that type of stuff, which has to be, like, super value. But that rigorous pace, you know, that many shows and, like you said, doing the same thing. You know, it's probably the discipline's a mixed blessing, I'd imagine, within that situation.
Yeah. But it's kind of cool because it set me off on this path of, you know, for like a good year and a half, I was like, so I did the show for almost 5 years. And I would say to like any musician that's like checking that out, if you're young and you still have the itch to like tour and be in bands, but you're like trying to pursue something that it's like it's awesome for a year and you make awesome friends. I'm still extremely close friends with like everybody on that I worked with through that, like to this day. It's like you stay in touch with people that are all over the world, and that's an incredible experience. Like nothing can replace those kind of connections that you make with friends and stuff. But you know, as a creative person, it's like after so long, things like that can get a bit taxing. But it kind of set me on this path where I was like, all right, I'm just going to not leave the house except to go to work. And I'm going to just stay home and just kind of create my own music from home. And I set up like a small, not even a home studio. I just got like an interface with a couple more inputs than what I had previously. And, you know, just tried to work on writing music. And I got really into like gear and pedals and creating like soundscapes and just weird shit at home. I was just like making all this weird music by myself. But that's kind of how I met John from Baroness. So he's got this excuse me.
John's, I love the sound. I love the sound effects. No, I was going to keep it. That's fantastic. Well, yeah. So tell us about the connection with about that. Why don't you go into just tell about the connection with Baroness and you know that piece of your work.
Yeah, so John's got this fuzz pedal company based out of Philly. It's called Philly Fuzz. And while I lived in Vegas, obviously being from Philly, I was just like looking up stuff online and looking up fuzz pedals and like, oh, these ones use silicone transistors, or these ones use germanium transistors, and sound different and blah blah. And then I found these ones called Philly Fuzz, and I was like, oh, I have to have that. It says Philly on it.
Right, right.
That's sick. And it turns out it was John's pedal company. I didn't know that, but I was a really big Baroness fan. I discovered them when the Yellow and Green record came out, and was following them ever since. Like when Purple came out, I was like really stoked about that. I remember my brother sending me a link. He's like, yo, new Baroness record, Purple, like new color.
Yeah.
You know? And so John sent me a message online and was like, yo, did you buy one of these pedals? And I was like, yeah, person from Baroness. Why is it really him, or is it like his, you know, whatever, his manager? I don't know how this works. But that's just like how we met and kind of became buds. He was like, we should maybe we could meet up and like demo some of these pedals. And he's like, I have a whole bunch of gear at home. And he really does. The dude has so much fucking gear. It's so it's just kind of something we bonded over and became buds. And yeah, I think just around that same time, their current guitar player, Pete Adams, was like, pursue some other stuff. And John was like, hey, do you want to learn some Baroness songs? And that's kind of how I joined the band. So just kind of good timing for where everybody was at in their respective journeys. You know what I'm saying?
That's great. We'll chat a little bit more about that. Wanted to ask you a question about what types of art do you enjoy? Do you enjoy art of different forms? And like when you get to music, what are the type of things that influence you that you like to partake in as consuming art for yourself?
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky enough to get to be around a lot of visual artists. I'm not a visual artist at all, but I'm lucky enough to spend most of my life around people that are, like, between John obviously does incredible visual art, does all the album covers, and then just friends of his who are also involved in kind of the Baroness world and other like album art making worlds. So there, like, we have a friend named Marald who does all of the interior album artwork for Baroness. He did all the stuff on Golden Grey and on the Purple album as well. So my partner is also a visual artist, does a lot of like big canvas stuff and screen printing and stuff like that. So I feel very, very fortunate to be around all of these incredible artists, you know. I just love taking it in. I don't care what it is. Like, I love hearing people talk about their process or what they use, the materials they used. And yeah, as far as visual art, it's like, I can't do that, but I just love looking at that and hearing people speak about, like, you know, how they went through, how did you create this? And kind of just always blows my mind how you had a canvas with nothing on it and now there's something on it.
Yeah. It's,
your theme.
It is quite the, you know, it's that transformation and, you know, within the podcast and the show, just kind of like looking at those moments of how things are created. And you know, whatever form it is, just that spark that, you know, create something like where there wasn't sound before, there wasn't the image before. I wanted to ask you, Gina, just about like, with, you know, the current, you know, recording this, you know, amidst the pandemic and so many impacts on art and, public, performance, for you, you know, in, you know, you would be on tour right now. What role right now do you feel, both for yourself and other artists that you're around, like, what's the role of art? What's the role of music or metal right now in a pandemic? What do you think about that?
It's really fucking hard because this is what we depend on for our living, you know, is playing music and touring and doing that, and just, yeah, ourselves and so many of our friends are so widely affected by this. It's not only us, it's people that work at venues. When we're not on tour, typically I work at a venue in Philly. So now not only are we not on tour, but the venue's closed, obviously.
Right.
Affects our, like, people that are doing audio, people that are doing so many different facets of what goes into going on tour. That's not just like the four or five people on stage with instruments or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? There's so many people affected by this. It's cool that we kind of have time to be like, all right, you're forced to slow down. You can create something, but that also kind of puts this looming pressure over, I think, creative people, where it's like, now I have time, I don't have an excuse. There's this weird pressure looming over to create and be really highly productive, but that can kind of be really taxing mentally, you know?
It'd be like a weight or something you feel compelled to, or just like that you have to do, where you're like, I'm just trying to keep my head straight in this messed up, like, what I'm seeing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's like we're not on tour. We have the time. We should be being productive, right? Like, we should be creating. We should be doing this. But the outside world is different. I can't go out and go to places or see people or interact with people the same way. So it's like the things that would inspire my creativity or things that I'm putting out before, I'm not getting the same input. You know what I mean? So, when you're just alone in your house all day and all night, that can be cool for a little while, but there's definitely been a couple weeks in here where me personally, I've just been like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what,
yeah,
what I should do with that. Maybe I'll just watch another episode of whatever the hell I'm watching. You know what I mean? Like, so it's hard. I think only recently I've been trying to take that pressure off and just be like, all right, it's okay to not have every day be like, I have to be the most creative and productive person. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things, that I've felt, if we talk about like performance and music, I mean, I've described people for me, I love going to shows. I love going to shows with my son or, you know, when I go to a metal show, you know, it's like when particularly for me is the doom metal crowd. And like, I don't know, there's a certain vibe, there's a certain kinship, there's a certain ceremony that takes place. And that ceremony has been lacking, for both, you know, performance, your ability to like be there up on stage and like seeing the fans, you know, love a particular genre of music, love Baroness. And, you know, that type of ritual, is missing. And I know it's for some folks who like, you know, you go through the work week and be like, well, at least on like, you know, Friday or Saturday, you'd be like, I'm going to go hit that show and I'm going to get some of that stuff out. And, that's just missing right now. It's definitely been something to adjust to. And I'm sure on your side, you know, having the expectations, you know, to be on tour, you know, right now and just being like, okay, really like to play live now, I'd imagine, right?
Of course, yeah. And just interact with people, with your bandmates and with people at shows. Like, I love playing live because I love meeting the people that go to shows. I love going to shows. I try to go to shows in Philly as often as I can, just about every weekend, you know. We were talking about Kung Fu Necktie a little bit earlier before the podcast started. You know, like, Philly's great for house shows, and there's a lot of great venues, and so we're missing that. But I do see where people are just getting creative and just trying to make the most of it and do different things. Like, you know, you see a lot of videos where people are like recording themselves and then like screen splitting it with, you know, someone else that's recording themselves playing a track or whatever. And you know, I've gotten to collaborate with some friends on some really fun stuff. I did like this Danzig cover with my buddy that does this 2 Minutes to Late Night show. But it's things like that where it's like, this is going to occupy a couple days worth of working on stuff. It's making me feel productive. It's fun. It's lighthearted. And so trying to engage in stuff like that is really helpful mentally, you know, and you hope that it brings a smile to someone else's face the same way it brought a smile to you when you're working on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I saw your cover of Hot for Teacher on the 2 Minutes Till. yeah. I was like, I mean, that was that performance was just so. It was just a badass performance. That looked like so much fun. It sounded like just so much fun. And the collaboration is, yeah, the part of like how you collaborate now. There's some distance, and I imagine that's something to try to navigate. Hey Gina, what is art? That's one of the big questions I have. What is art?
Well, being around so many visual artists, I constantly see this kind of theme of, obviously, the cliche of like, life imitates art, art imitates life. But I see a lot of visual artists who are friends of mine that you know, the stuff they make, the things that they're painting are reflections of little things that are going on in their daily lives or specific instances that happened to them and stuff like that. So when I see that in my friends who are making stuff currently, when I go and look back at, like, you know, if I'm at a museum or I'm looking at like a classic art piece, I tend to think about the same things, like, what was this person going through when they were making this specific piece? I know for me, not as a visual artist, but just as a musical artist, that theme kind of carries over to me as well. Like, everything I'm playing in a more abstract way is like a reflection of what I have going on in that moment or in this particular day or week or month or whatever it is. Or maybe I'm tapping into something that I've suppressed and somehow, like, the specific notes I'm playing are tapping into that and, you know, making me think about other things. Like, I was doing a vocal track with a friend of mine the other day, and like, we had recorded this jam back in like December before everything was obviously shut down, and we've been kind of just messing with different mixes and just kind of sitting on it. And she said, like, dude, why don't you just do some vocals? Don't think about it, don't listen back to it, and just send it to me. And she's like, I think if you listen back to it, you're gonna be really critical and we'll never get to hear it. But if you just send it to me, just having an outside buddy be like, no, that was cool, like, maybe that can be helpful. So it's like, you know, trying to do this vocal track and just, you know, kind of tapping into some suppressed things that I had deep down. And I know it sounds cheesy, but sometimes the only way to tap into those things is through creating art, creating music, blocking everything from the outside world out, and just kind of getting silent with yourself and taking that time to get in there. And I just feel really lucky to have a way to express that. You know, I feel really lucky that I can pick up a guitar and do that, or I can, you know, pick up a microphone and just scream and, you know, and get all that stuff out. So to me, art is not only the finished product or the thing that you walk away with or the thing that you can show somebody, but it's the whole process, you know. Actually, think to me, it's more about the process than the finished thing. And you just hope that the finished thing inspires somebody else and their own thought process and their own creative process. And, you know, you just hope that it inspires somebody to think differently, think about something, remember something, conjure up something inside. And so to me, that is art, that, I guess.
No,
you have to put like a period on it. That is art, you know.
That's the thing. I mean, I think the questions are fun, and I was really following what you're talking about. And I think a lot of times people talk about, and they really do get into the process, right? Because there tends to be, like, when you discuss, like, what is art, is there seems to be like a need for intention, right? Like I'm expressing this out and it might take this form. And but I think the question is interesting, because people are experiencing art and have like kind of like a working definition of it. And it's like, I know it when I see it has been one of the responses, you know, like, I think that was like the Supreme Court definition for pornography. It's like, I know it when I see it. And art kind of is like, I can't sit here and explain exactly what's going to tip over into art, but I know when I see it, it's like, I can hear it or see it. So, by the way, love Danzig. I had a note here. I know you mentioned Danzig. I seen you with the Danzig shirt, and you mentioned you done the cover. I wrote Danzig in big letters. So that's it. I have Danzig on my sheet. So
amazing. It's so hard to define. I think when we were doing Gold and Gray, that really put me through the ringer as far as how I'm thinking about guitar and thinking about music in general, and it turned into more of an art form, where it was like, I can do this like rock solo, or I could just not and let there be space. And like, to me, like, decisions like that on a musical level really like kind of challenge me, like, okay, like I feel like I'm thinking about this more as, you know, an art piece as far as this album goes, instead of like, you know, no, it's all about me, the person creating it. I want to do the riff. It's like, no, dummy, just like, just let the song be the song. You know, it's not about the person as an individual. We're just trying to create a piece here. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and on that, a couple more questions, Gina. And you're speaking about creating right there. Why do you create? Do you ever ask that question of like, you know, why, like exactly why am I doing this?
Yeah, every day I wake up and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Sometimes I don't create, you know. Sometimes I try, and more times than not, I fail to create. But that's part of the art form, you know. You're just trying shit out, seeing what works, seeing what fails, you know. When I successfully create, I'm really stoked, but those times are a lot fewer than the times I try and fail and learn something, or the times that I don't, because it's like I'm too self-conscious, or I'm too in my head, or I'm too, you know, mentally not there, which we probably spend another hour talking about all the reasons I'm mentally just not there. I'm somewhere else. Dark.
Well, you know, part of the thing is, and we're talking with Gina Gleason, a Baroness. Gina, I didn't save the easiest question for the last question, and I've been told I need to do that. So I gotta hit you with, I need to know why there's something rather than nothing.
I don't know, man. I mean, why is there something rather than, sometimes nothing is fucking cool. Why is there something rather than nothing? Well, because we're humans and we just have this, like, you know, impulse to just always put something, always be doing something, always be productive, always be looking at your phone, you know? So maybe that's why there's always fucking something, is because we're human beings and we can't not have the impulse to, like,
I can dig that.
Whatever. It's like, Jesus, just, can you just let there be fucking nothing?
I'm vibing with your answer to this, because it's like there's too many fucking somethings. All right.
Yeah.
Can we have a little peace? Can we have a little fucking nothing?
Now's a great time to have, you know, nothing and quiet and be stoked about that, and you know.
Thank you for helping me with your answer to that question, because I just jumped right in with you on that one. Gina Gleason, a Baroness. Hey, could you tell, as we wrap up here, Gina, just as far as, you know, listeners, fans, you know, where to find you, where they, you know, you want them to find you online, where to look for material, Baroness, all that type of thing. Where they come and contact you and your band Baroness?
Baroness has a website called yourbaroness.com, because baroness.com was taken by like a leather kinky site.
Okay. Well, you can go to both sites if you want.
But yourbaroness.com is where Baroness is at. And the same as the Instagram handle. It's just yourbaroness. And I don't use Facebook, but I use Instagram. And it's just my personal thing. And sometimes I do guitar videos or do stuff about music. Or sometimes I'm just sitting in the woods or just having coffee or whatever. But it's just Gina Gleason. GTR guitar, my big creative name, Gina Gleason guitar.
I like it.
Stoked to talk to you on there.
Gina, and thanks for that too. I really wanted to make sure folks could connect, you know, and I know, for me, you know, looking at YouTube and some of the Cirque du Soleil stuff, some of your really cool performances and covers. I saw you play with Carlos Santana. It's just, you know, as easy it is to say, I mean, folks, look up Gina Gleason, some of these great performances. There's a lot of great stuff to watch. You're a great performer, great guitarist. And it's been a great joy to be able to talk to you. And also, you know, I was kind of excited to hear you from Philly. Like I said, I know a couple of folks over there, and you know, I've had an East Coast vibe lately on the podcast, but I can say for people that I know out here, when you know, there comes a time for, you know, tours and shows to happen, whatever form that they do, a lot of folks out in the Pacific Northwest, including myself, love to see you play guitar in the great band Baroness. Wanted to thank you so much, Gina, for being on the podcast. It's been an absolute thrill to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, I think you guys are a really cool thing. It's a cool concept for a podcast. You know, it's really interesting, and it's great talking to you, man.
Thanks, Gina, and hope to hear from you soon. Take care now.
All right, see you, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.